Hello and welcome to another edition of KUAR's Week in Review podcast. On the show this week,
after meeting at the Political Animals Club in Little Rock, Senator Tom Cotton talks about Donald Trump, NATO, and the wall.
Arkansas's unemployment rate rises in all cities, but remain below year-ago levels.
Governor Hutchinson hopes investments in tech companies will pay dividends for the state.
Chancellor of Arkansas State University abruptly resigns after audits show preferential treatment for family members.
And we'll check in with Arkansas's Green Party. Will they attract Bernie Sanders supporters to their cause?
All that and more is coming up. I'm Chris Hickey.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
And I'm Michael Heplin.
All right, Jacob. Well, this week, our junior U.S. Senator Tom Cotton spoke at a Political Animals Club gathering in Little Rock. But I think the interesting things that we'll be touching on are what he said after the speech, specifically about the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the presidential nominee, Republican Donald Trump, and Trump's plan for building a wall on the U.S.-Mexican border in the South. So kind of take us through, first off, what was his speech about? And then let's get into this more meatier stuff.
Yeah. His speech, he promised to have a lot of inside baseball. He said he knows people at the Political Animals Club like to hear the stuff you don't get to read in the papers. And it was at the Pleasant Valley Country Club in West Little Rock. It's oftentimes at the governor's mansion. But he did talk about things that weren't always in the newspaper, but I think it's maybe a little because it was a little too dry for the newspaper. He talked about the process of how he receives intelligence briefings, where he goes to the Little Rock FBI field office when he's in town so he can get them in a secure environment and a secure room. But basically, he kind of impressed upon everyone that he is really into these intelligence reports. He's a senator because he wants to know about all these kind of things. He talked about his placements on high-ranking committees that have access to special information that other senators don't. So that was the majority of his remarks. He didn't really get that much into presidential politics. He did a little bit. But this is, let me jump to afterward. He talked to reporters, and he was pretty candid on some things, at least. Kelly Kissel, who's a reporter at the Associated Press, he was asking him about Trump's comments about the Gold Star family, the Khans, asking, if Trump went over the line. And, of course, Tom Cotton, he will let everyone know, is a military veteran, so this is an issue he has a lot of personal relationships with as well.
So Donald Trump should get off the back and forth with the Khan family and get back on the issues that actually matter to the American people, which is the economy, which we now know is the weakest since World War II, and keeping this country safe from the threat of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups, and defending our interests around the world.
But isn't there a pattern? You've had, mocking a disabled reporter. We've had the Muslim wall. We've had Mexican rape, things like that. When do you draw the line?
Well, it's almost like the pattern of Hillary Clinton lying. I mean, she told five different lies about her email server, and then this weekend she lied about the lies that she told. In the end, though, I am confident that the American people will be safer and more prosperous with a Republican president and a Republican Congress.
So it's equal to say then that Hillary's things, which she's done, which she has said various stories and things like that. The things that Mr. Trump has said, mocking the disabled, entire race of people of being rapists. Those are equal.
Well, as I said today in my remarks, I have my disagreements with Donald Trump. I've stated them clearly in the past, and I will again in the future. Hillary Clinton has lied to the faces of the families of fallen Americans as well at the Benghazi repatriation ceremony.
So that was his initial answer to that sort of issue. He hasn't talked about it too much. Of course, we have a lot of national Republican leaders calling for Donald Trump to apologize, really strongly rebuking him. So I asked, followed up, and I asked, you'll notice he said that Trump should get off the back and forth with the Khan family, but he didn't say Trump should apologize or anything like that. So I asked Senator Cotton if Trump should apologize.
I think he should express his regret and apologize for what he said to the Khans, and again, to all Gold Star families. There's about 7,000 of these families. They're a diverse group. Some support Donald Trump. I've heard from some who support Donald Trump and want him to win. Some obviously support Hillary Clinton. But I think the best course of action for him at this point is to express regret for what he said, to apologize, and to move forward to focus on the real issue.
So, of course, Donald Trump has not apologized, doesn't plan to. He even had a spokesman on CNN recently try to blame the death of the Army captain on President Obama, even though it happened in 2004. So Donald Trump's not going to apologize for that probably. So the other big issue that happened this week with Donald Trump is that he's been kind of loosely threatened to withdraw NATO support if he thinks some certain smaller member nations aren't contributing enough. He also incorrectly identified Ukraine's status in NATO. And of course, Russia has been sort of invaded Ukraine and the Crimea and in eastern Ukraine. And Donald Trump has said, well, maybe that was okay. I've heard most of those people wanted to be Russians. So here's Cotton's response to some of that NATO information.
If anyone thinks that not honoring our obligations under NATO would make war less likely, they're exactly wrong. It would make more war more likely because it would embolden our adversaries. So those are some policy differences. But in the end, with a Republican Congress, we will pass a bill to repeal and replace Obamacare. Trump will sign it. Clinton won't. We will pass real immigration reform that will enforce our border and enforce our laws. Trump will sign it. Clinton won't. We'll pass a law to increase our defense budget. Trump will sign it. Clinton won't.
So, I mean, he kind of just said that Trump's policies might make war more likely in some way. But the real selling point from Senator Cotton for Trump the whole night or the whole afternoon was if Trump is president, then Republicans in Congress can get their bills signed into law. So that was his big selling point, that Congress can do something.
If a Republican, and that's key, mm-hmm. just that Republican would be ideal. It's been interesting. You've also had Senator John Bozeman, the senior senator from Arkansas, also critical of Trump, say the comments about the military family were out of line. And I think the frustration for Republicans is that Trump has let this issue that maybe he should have just taken and moved on. He's fired back at the Khan family, and he's had opportunities to go after Hillary Clinton this week, but he stays sort of on these side issues. So it's really a distraction, and just that Trump won't kind of stay disciplined, I guess, and read from the teleprompter.
It is interesting they're calling for him to have discipline and to stay on the teleprompter on message. In a way, he's being totally consistent with his attitude and character about every other kind of mm-hmm. incident for the past 8 months. So I don't know what this cry for discipline is. This is who he is.
I think there were some who thought maybe he would kind of be modified for the general election.
You know, Donald Trump would never, he's never said anything like that. It's always just been people, moderate campaign Republicans who didn't support him, kind of hoping he would. But uh-huh. Donald Trump has always said, I'm who I am. He's not apologizing for himself or to anybody else. And I think it's important to note with Cotton in this instance, but also Senator Bozeman, that Arkansas Republicans, they have to be asked about this in order to say that Donald Trump said something wrong. There are some national Republicans like Paul Ryan that volunteer it and try to be proactive because he wants to help shape the discussion on this. But let's keep on going with this NATO thing. Kelly Kissel, he didn't like Tom Cotton's answer on NATO enough.
Mr. Trump has said that Ukraine is in NATO, which it is not. Is he bright enough to be president?
I'm confident that Donald Trump is going to be well aware of who is in NATO and what our NATO obligations are by the time that this election is
so
over.
So he's got 5 months before January. Look, he's a foreign policy.
He's a successful businessman, and if the American people elect him in November, I think that the American people with a Republican Congress are going to be safer and more prosperous than we have been for the last 7 years, or would be under Hillary Clinton.
This is the last example from this interview after the Political Animals Club. During his remarks, he mentioned something about building a wall and that he thought that Donald Trump did tap into Americans' thoughts on immigration better than any other candidate has, better than party elites have. But Tom Cotton, he's not for a wall, he's for a fence.
Well, I'm for a fence, probably double-sided fence with different kinds of technology augmenting it. But look, fences work. There's a reason why it's around the White House. There's a reason why people have fences on their property. We built fences in certain sectors of our southern border, like around San Diego, and they've been demonstrated to work time and time again. So I think that we have to have a fence on our southern border if we want to make sure that border is secure. I think a fence is again, proven more effective on our southern border, on Israel's southern border, and European nations that have used fences. The point is, there has to be a physical barrier. Physical barriers work. That's one reason why, you know, when we were in Iraq and Afghanistan, the first thing you do when you set up a new outpost is you set up physical barriers. They may be made of dirt and sand, or they may be made of reinforced concrete based on what you have in hand, but there needs to be a physical barrier that is the outward expression of our inward determination to control our borders and enforce our immigration laws.
I know, I just thought that was kind of funny because, like, Trump's motto that everybody knows the whole country is like, build a wall. But Tom Cotton will not say build a wall, but
there might,
but he
also
agrees with the premise.
Yeah, there might also be a fiscal conservative argument there, and that a fence could be cheaper than a wall.
Probably.
Just to wrap this up, I guess, about Tom Cotton, of course, somebody asked him, are you going to run for president next time? And he said, well, no, we'll be reelecting Donald Trump.
All right, moving on. We got some figures this week about unemployment numbers for the different metropolitan areas, otherwise known as cities, in Arkansas. Give us the skinny.
All right. So as we've been aware of the past several months, maybe a year or so, Arkansas is outperforming the national unemployment rate. So this gives us a little bit more detail as to how different locations are doing instead of just that blanket 3.7 or 3.9% number it is for the entire state. So Fayetteville is all, the Fayetteville-Springdale-Rogers metropolitan area, which is, you know, everyone who knows when you drive up there, they all kind of are starting to run together in some degree. They always are topping the list for Arkansas's metropolitan areas as the best performing. They're the 10th best in the entire country with 3.1%. However, the big news out of this report is that every single Arkansas metropolitan area, the unemployment rate got worse from May to June. But it's still well below year ago levels. For example, in Fayetteville, it was 3.1% for month of June. However, in May, it was 2.8%. So you'd rather have 2.8 than 3.1. But in June of last year, it was 4.1%. So a whole single percentage point difference there. So Fayetteville is 10th in the country. Jonesboro and Little Rock were 34th in the country out of all metropolitan areas. Jonesboro's is 3.7%. Little Rock is 3.7%. Both of those are several percentage or tenths of percentage points different last month. Best one in the entire country was 2.3%. So in Fayetteville had that 3.1, and that's Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The worst one, worst city in the country, anyone want to guess?
Flagstaff, Arizona.
It's El Centro, California, and has 23.7%.
Oh.
There were two in the 20s. Everyone else was like 9 or below. The U.S. average is 5.1%. But now that we're at the bottom of the list, let's get to Memphis, West Memphis, and Pine Bluff. They're both at the bottom for Arkansas at 5.7%, but that's kind of close to the national average, but it is worse than it. So there
and
we go.
Some good numbers, too, when it came to a revenue report released this week, though a little bit mixed. Arkansas did see an increase over the previous year for July, the first month of the fiscal year. Arkansas took in about $400 million in net available revenue. However, that was 1.7% below what had been forecast, but officials aren't expressing any concerns at this point. Believe this just may be a one-month blip. The governor still sounded optimistic about this, as did the economist at the Department of Finance and Administration. But still, it was almost half a percentage point above the same month in 2016 for the fiscal year. At this point, we did end the fiscal year last month with a $177 million surplus, and this has been key for the governor putting money aside and saying that he expects eventually the economy will slow down, that we won't keep having the boom that we're experiencing right now. But indicators are pretty good for the state.
Well, I know that Governor Hutchinson hopes to continue any sort of economic uptick, if you will, by trying to attract more business to the state. He's, of course, notorious for going on trade trips to different continents in order to attract different corporations, multinational companies, and so forth. But this week, he also announced a kind of state-private partnership that may lead to investment from tech companies in Arkansas. Jacob, could you elaborate?
Yes, Governor Hutchinson might be traveling the globe one week looking for jobs, but other weeks he's trying to get startups to start in Little Rock and stay here. So there's these things called accelerators that we hear about sometimes. And basically, it's like an intensive 12-week thing where they get 10 startup companies and they give them $50,000, a little bit of money, and they're all tech-based type companies that are trying to be innovative in some way, trying to start up and do... So this particular one is called... They did it in the previous 2 years. It's called the FinTech Accelerator. It's about different financial technologies that can be sold to banks and things like that to help them deal with regulations and logistics types of issues. So the governor is going to give $1 million in discretionary funds distributed over 2 years, so $500,000 a year. It's being matched 50-50 by this financial tech company that has a presence in Little Rock, FIS. And the governor also said that he likes this concept so much, the concept of the state investing money in these small-scale private companies to help them, that he's going to ask the legislature in 2017 for $2 million to expand this concept beyond financial tech to other areas like healthcare and things like that. We've covered things like the HubX Accelerator before, for instance. But this is the governor. He spoke at the Clinton School of Public Service. There was a demo day where all these companies from the previous accelerator spoke to a room full of technology people and investors and made the case for their company. And, of course, all of them were very optimistic about all the profits they could turn out in the near future. But here's Governor Hutchinson. I asked him, you know, why is it good for the state to be investing in this? You know, wouldn't you rather have private investors supporting this, particularly because he's a free market conservative governor?
FIS had the vision to do this FinTech Accelerator, and we watched it. And we watched the 10 companies that are here. We've heard their presentations, but AEDC made our pitch to them, and we are optimistic that we'll be able to attract one or two of those companies to Arkansas, which means more employees. And so it's bringing, what this means is that we're bringing the best talent from around the globe, really.
Absolutely.
Right here to Arkansas to help us to make the case that we ought to be the technology hub for our region.
And the governor went on to say in this next bit we'll play that there are lots of examples of the government doing public-private partnerships. That's an increasing trend as of late. So he tried to explain that a little bit more.
There's always a partnership when it comes to research and technology. For example, we have the Arkansas Research Alliance, and so our universities are partnering with the private sector in furthering research. And sure, there should be absolutely a benefit to FIS, the private sector, in this research, but we've identified what we believe will be certainly benefits to the state. One, it strengthens a great corporate citizen and job creator in FIS, and their connections and support here in Arkansas, but it also has spin-off technology companies that we hope that will result from it. It brings talent here. And this is, this is more than a pilot with FIS.
Absolutely.
Because we've had success. But in terms of additional accelerators, these are pilots. We're going to measure the return on the investment. And this is a reasonable, cautious approach to helping to build that technology investment and sector in this state.
So there's a governor. If it works out, at least, that's a area that he wants to pursue. The state keep on trying to invest in these companies. But I was kind of thinking about it, just I think because the Republican National Convention just happened. Past presidential elections, especially with Mitt Romney, they were critical of Obama for picking winners and losers, things like Solyndra. And this is like... it's $500,000 over a year. It's not the same thing at all, but it's kind of a similar concept, the state choosing to invest in individual companies.
Have there been any bona fide like cost-benefit analyses of these kinds of projects?
I don't know.
Okay, sorry.
I mean, the governor...
It'd be interesting to see.
I haven't seen anything like that. The governor, he says that based on his past experience that he's confident it will work out. In part, I think the FIS's confidence gives him a lot of confidence in this. If this is something that successful businesses are trying to do and implement, he wants to follow that.
Okay, Michael, this week, Arkansas State University announced that its chancellor, Dr. Tim Hutson, would be resigning. It was kind of an abrupt announcement, not really expected by a lot of, I guess, observers of higher education in the state.
Yeah.
However, there were a couple of telling audit reports that came out immediately after this news, and are actually immediately One came immediately preceding the news. One came immediately after the news.
Yeah, and there have been some hints of problems that we had been hearing with the study abroad program at ASU, which that program was overseen by Tim Hudson's wife. And it was the investigation into that that it appears led to some issues here where Hudson was allegedly using his position to help family members to make some extra money for his wife, even though he was making $360,000 a year. Also, we later learned, apparently, some favors for a child going to college. But as this news first came out, I spoke with Lance Turner with Arkansas Business. He did a lot of reporting on this and spoke to many people. And here's what he told me as we were learning details on Wednesday.
Well, from the university, you know, they're not saying, you know, exactly, they're not citing any specific reasons as to why Tim Hudson resigned. So, you know, they've called it a personnel matter. The system president, Charles Welch, isn't commenting, you know, saying specifically that it is a personnel matter. So we don't know, you know, from their mouths what the situation is, but we do know about this audit, which had sort of been revealed last week in some reporting by the Democrat Gazette and by the Jonesboro Sun, that sort of cast a light on study abroad program at Arkansas State that was led by Deidre Hudson, Tim Hudson's wife, and that was really found to be in disarray and disorganized, and some maneuvering by Tim Hudson as well that came out in the audit to have his wife hired full-time, even though university policy prohibits Hudson from hiring his wife as a full-time subordinate. So there was some maneuverings that were kind of taking place that weren't, you know, up to snuff, that didn't have a good appearance, and we sort of surmised that this probably had a lot to do with what happened Tuesday evening when Tim Hudson actually submitted his resignation.
And last night, the chancellor and the ASU system president had a meeting?
That's right. That's what we know. They met last night, and then late last night, it was past 9:30 when Tim Hudson actually emailed a very short resignation email to Charles Welch, the ASU system president. It was two sentences saying that he resigned and that he wished everyone well and that he would be moving on.
Did the university say anything about whether or not any kind of agreement has been reached, any kind of severance package?
Actually, there is no severance, and that's according to Jeff Hankins, who's the ASU system vice president for strategic communications. There's no severance agreement in place. No one is paying anybody any money. Tim Hudson has 45 days to leave the chancellor's residence and move on, and that's basically what the agreement boils down to between the two parties. So it's a little different from what you often see sometimes at universities or even in sports teams when someone resigns or is fired or is asked to leave. Often there's a severance in place, and no severance in this instance with Tim Hudson.
But certainly very unusual for a university to have its chancellor leave this abruptly.
It is, yeah. It's probably not the ideal situation for them. Fortunately, Arkansas State had someone waiting in the wings ready to go. That's Dr. Lenita Cooksey. She'll be serving as acting chancellor while Charles Welch, the system president, puts together a plan to find a longer-term interim appointment. And then ultimately, you'll know that they will create a team of some kind, as these things usually happens. They'll create a team to find a new chancellor to lead the university going forward. But yeah, you know, just a few weeks before school, it's not the best time, but it obviously was something they thought that had to happen.
That's reporter Lance Turner with Arkansas Business. Thanks for your reporting on this, Lance.
No problem. Thank you.
And that was us on Wednesday. Worth noting, the following day on Thursday, another audit was released, which showed three examples that auditors said might amount to violations of a state law that prohibits a public servant from using his official position to gain special privileges for himself, family members, or anyone that has a substantial financial relationship. So it sounds like the university found very disturbing allegations, and they agreed, both sides, Hudson and the university, to part ways. He also has 45 days to be out of the chancellor's residence.
And no severance package, I've heard.
No severance package, just accrued vacation days.
Certainly contributes to a little bit of instability, especially at a time I think ASU is trying to open an osteopathic medical school and also a campus in Mexico.
Yeah, ASU's really been trying to position itself for growth, to expand into new areas. Of course, the University of Arkansas system dominates the state, but ASU has grown rapidly, and yes, the medical training, just one of many areas that they have been expanding into.
It was kind of said that one of the reports from the audits, at least, that where he was trying to ask officials at Loyola and Southern Alabama and another university or two, New York Institute of Technology, where he was asking for them to, seemed like he was suggesting that maybe they could do something for financial aid to help a family member. And he said, like, call on me if you ever need me for anything, that would be a violation of state law. So he's lost his job amicably in some way. He resigned. He wasn't fired. What's next? I mean, if he broke the law, do you know what's going on with that?
Haven't heard anything to that effect. I believe prosecutors were asked, and at this point there is no criminal investigation into this.
We'll see.
All right, Chris, you looked into one of the state's most minor of minor parties. Sometimes we talk about the Libertarians, but of course the Green Party of Arkansas has been around longer. But as of late, they haven't. They don't have much of an apparatus at all in the state. After 2014, they had a gubernatorial candidate and a U.S. Senate candidate. They were both fairly competent lawyers, educated people. But now there's only one actual officer in the entire state party, and you spoke with him. What's going on with the Green Party?
Yeah, well, I think there are actually two. One just kind of joined on in recent weeks, but the treasurer, Mark Jenkins, is the website lists him as the only active office holder. There's also another fellow out of Fayetteville, Tyler Dye, who's serving as the interim chair, and he's just been kind of doing that, he said, when I talked to him, for a matter of weeks, literally. Right. So,
in the Green Party, they don't have any state candidates on the ballot, but they think Jill Stein, who is the likely presidential nominee.
Yeah, the reason why we're talking about this is because the Green Party, the National Green Party, is holding its nominating convention in Houston this weekend. Jill Stein, who ran on the ticket in 2012 as well, is expected to get the party's nomination. And I talked with Tyler Dye and Mark Jenkins just about the state of the Green Party. As you said, it's kind of a fledgling operation right now, to say the least. They did submit enough signatures to the Secretary of State's office to get their presidential candidate on the ballot for this November. They just needed 1,000 valid signatures from registered voters. In the past, in order to field state candidates and local candidates, they needed 10,000 signatures, and that's in lieu of getting 3% of the vote for their gubernatorial or presidential candidate in the last general election.
And this is the first cycle in many cycles, maybe the first ever in the state Green Party, where they don't have any state candidates.
Yeah, for the past several cycles, even though they haven't gotten that percentage, you know, that 3% threshold for their candidates, they have been able to collect those 10,000 valid signatures. But I guess, I don't know, there must have been some kind of demoralization after the 2014
The answer to this.
Oh, yeah.
They usually gather the signatures like in conjunction with the Libertarian Party, but I think basically they didn't have their share of the money for it.
Oh, okay.
Is what answer I got from a Green Party guy.
Well, there you have it.
And of course, the Libertarians are putting extra people on the ballot all the time and all sorts of races. They're more Libertarians are running for Congress than Democrats in Arkansas.
Yeah, they've certainly become the clear opposition party in some cases to the main two-party system. But let's get back to, I talked to Tyler Dye. He's, as I mentioned, the interim chair of this Green Party, not an official state party, but they have an operation based out of Fayetteville. You know, I think in every presidential election cycle, there's some interest in the third-party candidates and third parties in general. And he said that was the case this year.
We've gotten a lot of support here recently. I've been in contact with dozens and dozens of people that have said, you know, I've voted democratically my whole life, and now I want to get involved in the Green Party and try to make a push for real change in the state of Arkansas. And so I don't think that we'll have trouble meeting the signature requirement to get the 10,000 signatures to become a recognized party, just based on how much excitement there is right now for us and how much support we've gotten here recently.
And the 10,000 signature requirement, they're shooting for the 2018 election cycle to get that over with. But he says there has been a lot of attention, interested folks who are dissatisfied with the Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton.
We've gotten a lot of people that were former Bernie Sanders supporters that have decided, I can no longer vote for the Democrats just because they're left of Republicans. I need to vote for someone that shares my ideology, not just kind of shares my ideology. And then beyond that, I think we've done a lot better job here recently of reaching out to the progressive citizens of Arkansas.
And he cites like a social media campaign about that. But, you know, Bernie Sanders, the Vermont senator who fell short of getting the required delegate votes to get the presidential nomination, Democratic Party does share many of the same policy positions that the Green Party candidate Jill Stein does. Things like $15 minimum wage, Medicare for all. A lot of, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters are attracted to her position on, you know, student loan forgiveness, bailout kind of thing for student loans.
But of course, Bernie Sanders supports Hillary Clinton.
Yes, he does. Yes. And I did speak with somebody who was a Democratic delegate in Philadelphia for Bernie Sanders from Arkansas. She's kind of not sold on Hillary Clinton, for instance, and is kind of looking at different third-party candidates like Jill Stein to vote for in the presidential race.
I think it's sort of it's kind of a question that sort of is hard to answer, because you have people who might, in their hearts, want to vote for Jill Stein. But one of the things that I think all progressives are pretty united on is that, you know, Donald Trump is a disaster. And Arkansas is a notoriously red state. So some people may decide to vote for Hillary Clinton, even if they feel like Jill Stein speaks to their heart more, in order to try to upset some of Trump's foothold in Arkansas.
However, she cites more practical concerns of like winning state and local elections for progressives. And really, this is Dorian Dias. And she wanted to kind of emphasize this fact that, well, while the Green Party may share many of our ideals of, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters, we want to stay in the Democratic Party because they have the infrastructure to field these kinds of candidates. But she says she's going to vote her conscience in November, and that doesn't necessarily mean a vote for Hillary Clinton. So.
And while we're at it, I guess there have been a number of state Republican lawmakers on Twitter of late that have expressed a lot more doubt about Trump than they had before. State Representative David Meeks of the Conway Greenbrier area recently retweeted something from the Gary Johnson campaign saying, you know, remember to consider us. And he said, I'll be considering it. So there's Bob Ballinger told Arkansas Times something like that. I'm definitely, certainly not sure what I want to do.
Yeah, and I think they cited Charlie Collins, a state representative from Fayetteville, who said he's going to write in Tom Cotton's name in the presidential race.
And you've had some Republicans in Congress from elsewhere who have said they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton rather than Donald Trump, just kind of bothered by his temperament, whether or not he is the kind of person who should be in a position that powerful.
I bet we won't get any Arkansas Republicans saying that.
Probably.
But maybe they'll vote for Gary Johnson or something.
Okay, well, thanks again for listening to KUAR's Week in Review podcast. KUAR is a listener-supported service, but editorially independent of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. You can find us on iTunes, subscribe, and download the podcast there. I'm Chris Hickey.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
And I'm Michael Hiplin.
Thanks.
Bye.